This week's episode of Zen Founder is about how to onboard your spouse, how to pitch to your spouse as your first customer, as your first investor, as the first person you need to convince of your startup idea in order to be successful and keep your relationship intact. So we're going to talk about some communication strategies, some common pitfalls, and then some stories that we know about people doing this well. Finding the balance between their spouse being involved or not involved, depending on the kind of relationship that you're in. So we're excited about this week's show, but first we want to give a shout out to our patrons, to those of you listeners who have supported Zen Founder through our Patreon.
That's at supportzenfounder.com if you want to help out. So far we have 16 patrons who've pledged a total of $183 a month. Our most recent patrons who we want to thank include Ruben Gomez, Matt Paulson, Jacob Perkins, Derek Reimer, Rolf Wemenhove, Liam Smith, Samori Augusto, Matt Stubbs, and Ken Wallace. Thank you guys so much for pledging to help keep the show going, to help us improve the show. Hopefully you've noticed the new intro that we had our editor put together, and that's the kind of thing that we're able to do with these funds. We're able to up the game and improve the storytelling, improve the production, and just make it a better show. So if you feel like you get value out of this show, we'd love it. If you could help us out, go to supportzenfounder.com and pledge a few bucks a month.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
So I have a friend. Let's call him Jim. That's not his real name. He and I have been talking on the phone because he's thinking about really jumping up the stair step. And he has some apps that are generating a good amount of money, but it's not enough for him to quit his job. And he's been debating pretty hard whether or not to acquire an app. And he found one that was for sale, but it was quite expensive, several hundred thousand dollars, and he didn't have the cash. So he looked into getting a loan just from like a traditional bank. And since it's like acquiring a business, you can do this. And the numbers make sense. It's not a bad decision. And from the dollars and cents that he and I were talking about, you're always going to have hesitations when you're doing this because you do have to put up collateral, right? You have to, if you're going to get a big loan like this, you will have to secure it with perhaps your retirement, perhaps your house. And that was the case that Jim, my friend, found himself in. And he and I talked on the phone for a while, like 30, 45 minutes. And I finally got to the root of the issue. And I hadn't realized that the big issue was not whether the numbers worked. He was willing to take the risk on. He was willing to do that. Like he has that entrepreneurial mindset. But the big thing that was holding him back was he just didn't feel like he could get his wife on board. And he was debating, in essence, whether to move forward, whether he had her blessing or not.
Oh, that's a really big question.
Yep. And we didn't even realize it until we kind of stumbled into that.
So he's really stressed and worried about making this decision, but not for the business part of the decision, purely for the relational piece of the decision.
That's right. And he was considering, because he didn't know if he could convince her, because it may just be outside of her risk tolerance, period, to put the house on the line or to put retirement on the line in order to acquire a business. That was the topic that he and I focused on for the latter half of that call. And it was fascinating to dive into it and to realize, as I spoke, I realized, wow, my advice is don't go through with this unless you are in it together, unless each of you is buying in 100% and it's a joint decision and you've both decided that this is the right thing for your family. And it sounds obvious in retrospect, but while we were talking through this, it wasn't.
Well, I have a lot of empathy for the challenge of that situation.
Absolutely.
For both of them.
Yep.
It feels very different for one person to decide, I am going to risk my retirement, I'm going to risk my financial resources, but to risk that for a whole family without the complete buy-in of both people, like kind of like you got to in your conversation with him, like that might be a deal breaker.
That was the thing is, now that I've said it, it became totally obvious as soon as I said it in the conversation. And as I'm saying it now, it's like, well, of course. But it wasn't apparent to either of us that that was just the right thing to do. You know, that moving forward without the buy-in of everyone could potentially be a catastrophic decision.
But you shifted in your logic from business logic to this is the natural next step for Jim. This is the natural next thing. He's proved himself on smaller apps. He's has a successful business. This makes sense for him in the business world. But from the relational logic, from the family logic, that's where the problem lies. And I think the two of you had to really sort of shift in your conversation from using one set of questions to a different set of questions. And that's not obvious to me. From the business perspective, this is obviously like a reasonable decision. But from the family perspective, it's not.
Right.
It may not be.
And that's what we want to talk about today is really dive into what can happen if you don't do this, how money plays a role in onboarding your spouse, how each of you view spare time, how there needs to be mutual support. And then we really have three approaches that we've seen work successfully. And we want to talk through those towards the end of the episode, kind of the practical, tactical piece, like figure out which one of these is going to work for you and just make sure to do it. So let's start off. What can happen if someone doesn't do this, if you ignore this and try to kind of go off on your own and build the startup without getting your spouse's approval or buy-in?
I mean, certainly the startup world in which we have functioned and most people function requires a tremendous amount of work and in many cases sacrifice on behalf of the family. So to kind of do that to your family without their consent, that seems like not a good move. You know, I think the reality is that lots of marriages fail for lots of different reasons, but the stress of this kind of workload and having two very separate visions and dreams of what your life is about, that sounds like not a great recipe for a successful long-term relationship. So I would say if you don't really take the time to get your partner involved or at least aware of, get their consent, so to speak, then you really are risking the relationship in service of the business. And that may be something you're willing to do. We have to be honest that people have different values and there may be an entrepreneur out there who's thinking, you know, I can't not do this. And if that means that my relationship isn't going to survive this, then that's what it means. So that may be where you are. And that's certainly one perspective. Rob can't have that perspective because he shares the podcast with me. So at least he can't talk about it.
That wouldn't be good. The podcast would end. Oh, no.
That's the Jerry Springer version of Zen Founder.
That would be a
where Rob and Sherry break up.
On the podcast.
On the podcast.
That would get high ratings, good radio.
And then it would be done.
If you don't do this, and I think a lot of us, and by that I kind of mean the introverted entrepreneur, the more techie entrepreneur, like I kind of shied away from this early on and we didn't talk about it directly, you and I. I never sat down and said, you know what, I'm going to do this and here's what it means. Here's how long it's going to take. Because I didn't know the answer to a bunch of those things. I couldn't answer all the questions that you probably would have had. And so instead I went about doing kind of the gradual small wins approach we'll talk about later, which is I just went off and kind of did something with my free time as you were in grad school and basically built up some little things and over time built confidence. I think from both of us that this was actually a viable thing because I think that's kind of the worst case, like you said, is it can wreck the relationship. It can ruin the trust in the relationship and it can become a source of conflict, like a constant source of conflict if one spouse sees the other spouse constantly, quote unquote, flitting away your free time on this crazy project, on your little idea or whatever, right? It makes the founder feel like the spouse is nagging him or hating on him or her. And then it probably makes the spouse feel like it's just a crappy side thing that's never going to turn into anything.
And don't you want to be in a relationship where your partner knows and cares about what's important to you? I mean, you have this conversation because it's who you are and what you want to do and what you value. And if you're afraid to have that conversation or if you're afraid to ask for their support, ask for their help, ask for their buy-in, then, I mean, that's just not a relationship I would really want to be in. We're in a relationship because we want to know each other and support each other and listen to each other. Obviously, that gets complicated, but I would say the biggest reason to have this conversation about your dreams and your goals and what you're doing with your free time and your resources is that you want your partner to be involved, like at least peripherally, to know what you're doing, to care about what you're doing, to listen to your ideas.
Right. And I think hopefully this episode could actually be helpful in that respect. Aside from the joke you made at the beginning about manipulation, which is far from what we're talking about. Let's just be clear. I think that if you're listening to this and you feel like you haven't been able to talk to your spouse or significant other about this your dream and about what that means, perhaps this showing them this episode and then talking through it could be a way to get that conversation going.
I think early on in our experience with this, my biggest questions were about kind of what is this going to cost me? What is this going to cost our family? You know, you can kind of do what you want in your work time, so to speak. We've always had pretty separate work lives. Once it felt like the startups were going to take away or be kind of bump up against my time or our money, then I had more questions. And I think those are probably very common areas of concern for partners who are having this kind of conversation with their founder spouse.
Yeah, it seems like there's two pieces that the spouses have to figure out how you view them, right? There's spare time outside of work, and there is money. And how are those resources viewed within your marriage? Do you view them that you each have separate control of them? Like, I do see marriages where, although the couple spends time together, the spare time is not necessarily viewed as a communal thing. And folks have date nights and they hang out, but when you're on your own, you have freedom to kind of do what you want with that time. And if you wanted to go play a sport, or if you wanted to play video games, or have a hobby of painting miniatures, or want to start a startup, like, that's your thing and that's okay. Whereas other marriages work differently, where since you are a family, that basically your free time is no longer your own, right? And that it kind of needs to be used for the common good, I guess. And I think the money is the same thing. It's basically this commodity. And if you earn it, do you have some control over it? If you earn it in your business, does it stay in the business account and you can then use it to do startup stuff? Or does that always come back to the family and then it's for everyone to discuss and decide where that goes? So I think the first thing is to figure out, with both of those commodities, spare time and money, figure out which type of family are you in. Like, let's get it out on the table. You can probably tell by now if you've been married or with someone for a long time. Like, does these two things need to be addressed, basically, in this conversation that you're going to have with your spouse? Once you have that, the third piece that I think is important to communicate is that there needs to be mutual support of each other's dreams, and that this can't be one-sided forever. So let's say you've addressed the spare time and you've addressed the money concerns of, I think it'll cost this, or I think it'll be this much free time, and you've worked that out if you need to. This other piece that I don't think is communicated enough, and I think was one thing you and I stumbled upon early, and I think it may have been accidental. I know I wasn't deliberate about it, but it's this mutual support. You had gone to grad school and I had supported you while you were there. And you, as that wrapped up, you were pretty deliberate and you're like, look, I know that you have some things you want to get done and I'm going to support you as much as I can to do those. And so you gave me kind of the freedom for the pendulum to swing back in my direction. And that enabled me to have some time to do that. And I think if you're the founder right now and you're basically telling your spouse, I need this free time and I need some budget to do this, first question is probably, well, how long is that going to take? I don't think you can commit to a time frame because it really is unknown. I think that giving someone an idea of, look, I'm going to hit it hard for the next 6 months or for the next year and really try to make this work, and then allowing that communication to be like, look, it's going to swing back the other way, that we have to allow both of our dreams to thrive. It can't just focus on one person for 5 years or for a never-ending thing, because that's when marriages run into problems, is when there's too much focus on one person's dreams.
And I think just like in marketing, when you are working to get a customer on board, so are you doing with your spouse and your startup, your romantic partner and your startup. You're developing this dynamic relationship over time that's going to flex and change depending on what the needs of the relationship are. So in these initial conversations, I think it's obviously super important to talk about money. It's important to talk about time. It's important to talk about that open communication about what this is going to cost us as a couple. And then, of course, to acknowledge, like, I'm asking something of you, but I want to be able to provide something in return, whether that is a better lifestyle, higher income, more flexibility and time. There are all kinds of things that go with the startup life that many romantic partners would be very excited about. I think another important question is to do some exchange. I want to do this. How can I make that work for you? What's going to feel comfortable? How can I develop enough trust for you to feel good about me quitting my job or investing a certain amount of money in buying a new app? There's something that will ease that, whether that's 6 months of mortgage in the bank, or it's a weekend each month where you don't work and you spend time together, whether it's deciding that as soon as you make X amount of money, you're going to reinvest that in something that you both want, or that you're going to travel each year, or there's got to be something that your spouse gets out of this, basically. And I think you should be upfront about that, about what they need, what they want, and the timeline for that.
That's such a critical part of the conversation, I think, is to try to communicate the vision that you have as the founder. Like, why are you doing this? Most people who are in our circles, in the MicroConf, startups for the rest of us, the Zen founder circles, are not doing this for millions of dollars, and they're not doing it for the ambition of changing the world, as noble as that may be. They're doing it to better their lives and the lives of their families, frankly. And if you're able to communicate that and say, look, if this works, this is what our lives could look like. Like, I could be location independent. We could travel more. We could take a month every year and go to Europe. I could potentially homeschool the kids if that's something you guys want to do. I could have more flexibility in my work. I would travel less for work, or maybe not at all. We could have more money to just do some stuff. I'm just listing out some things you could do. You don't need to have all of these or any of those, but it's like, try to communicate the dream without like selling the dream. You're not trying to market to him or her. You're not selling a timeshare, but I think that non-founders, non-entrepreneurs too, don't necessarily understand that that is why you're doing it. That it's not some hobby like playing video games where you're doing it to kind of de-stress or whatever it is that you're playing video games for. There's an actual end goal in place. And if you can communicate it and talk about, there's so many examples of this now too, because 6-7 years ago, that was the problem, is like, I didn't have anybody to point to say, look at these people who have done this and their lives have changed. But there are a lot of us now who have quit our jobs. And while you can't promise that, you know, that you shouldn't say this is exactly what we're going to do, but you could say this is the vision I have for our lives. And that's why I want to do this. And I think that that's a really good place to start.
And I think right after that is the question, what's your vision for our lives? Because if you're in a partnership with someone who has a very traditional or conventional view of what they want their life to be, where it's soccer games on weekends and the elementary school carpool, and their ambition is a large house and a lot of stability, that may or may not work. And I guess that's where you get back to the earlier question, is do you do it without them, or do you say, for this phase at least of our relationship, I'm going to put my dreams on hold, or I'm going to do something different. I'm going to keep to nights and weekends, because they get a vote too. You've, especially if you're married, like, you've committed to build a life together, and ignoring that your spouse is really built differently and really not on board is not going to help you in the long run.
But even if you can't get your spouse fully on board to support maybe everything you need, there isn't one of these three approaches, is to basically do it separately, is to be open about it, but basically do it without their involvement. And you have to then balance this thing. We'll talk about I versus we, of at that point, you can't put so much on the line that it's going to endanger the family's finances or, you know, the family's other stuff. But I think the ideal case is that you are able to get your partner involved and bought into this vision so that it becomes your vision, you know, the family's vision, or at least the couple's vision of how you want the life to look like, and then make plans to try to turn that into a reality. That's the big thing. I mean, entrepreneurship for me has been freedom from a job, and it's been freedom to travel, and it's been more income than I would have been able to make as a salaried employee. And so my life is just better on all fronts. But there was a lot of nights and weekends. See, some people forget that, or they don't think that you have to do these nights and weekends for all that time, and that you, the time and the money investment is a real thing. And so I think that trying to make that clear up front is important.
So we've thought about a couple of different approaches to this. One is a very slow onboarding. It's the gradual approach. And this is kind of what happened in our family, whether it was intentional on Rob's part or not. But it's starting with small wins, with small apps, with small investments. The first app that you buy is $500, and then there's one that's $5,000, and then you might add some zeros as you go up. But I think one of the things that was so important for me in the beginning of this journey for us is that I saw all of these little successes early on, and then I just grew to trust the process and the idea, and it no longer felt strange to me. And it felt like, well, of course you're just buying a bigger app, or you're doing less consulting and more entrepreneurial work. That felt very obvious. But that took about 2 years.
Yeah, it was very much not on your radar. In fact, when we were dating, I remember talking about business and showing you some business magazines, and it was very foreign to you. And you were just like, that stuff seems really boring. I remember being like, okay, so we're not going to be able to talk about this. This is not going to be something that interests you. And that was okay. And I had kind of written it off. And the more that I did, you didn't have an interest early on, but once I started having some successes, you were like, oh, this is really interesting. Like, you're doing this? How does that work, right? Because it's just a foreign thing to folks who haven't thought about it. And I was surprised the first year you wanted to come to MicroConf. And I was concerned because you had never been in that world. I was concerned that it would somehow clash, or that, I don't know, that you wouldn't like it. I mean, it's very vulnerable for me, or it was at the time, to open up that world and bring you into it. Obviously, every step that we've taken that has brought you into this world more and more has worked out for the better.
I think the moment that I was really very interested was when you shared a little bit of the Tropical MBA podcast with me.
Oh, that's right. About, because you're into,
you have
travel.
Dan and Ian to thank.
Yeah. No, I think that was, I told you about what they were up to and about kind of how their crew works. And you were like, oh, that's possible. And I was like, yeah, like tomorrow it's possible, because I already was living off apps, you know, and it was a funny conversation.
That was the hook. That was the thing that I was like, okay.
Yep.
You have my attention.
Right.
I am motivated for this. And suddenly we had overlapping goals.
That's right. And if I had come and said, hey, I'm going to do this so that I can quit my job, you would have said, okay, good luck, right? I mean, that's good for you, but it really doesn't benefit us maybe as a couple, or it doesn't benefit you directly. And there's risk to it, right? It's like, I'm going to put in this time and this money, and it's going to allow me to do something. And I think you would have supported it, but how much can you support something that doesn't impact you? Whereas saying, yeah, this could lead to doing something that really benefits both of us and benefits all of us in terms of the travel and in terms of being able to be generous and in terms of, you know, the stuff that we have today, I think it was helpful to get you on the team.
But I'm always on your team. That's the thing. Like, and you're always on my team. Like, when I wanted to go to graduate school and spend 6 years and move across the country a couple times, I guess I just want to like point that out, because doing this kind of onboarding is not any different than any other thing that is important to one person in the family that requires the support and investment of everyone else. So yes, it helped that some of your plans included the possibility for travel. But when I pitched you on a PhD, it was that I can make way more money and have more fun, and it's important to me, and I get to do good in the world. And so it's important to just also have these conversations as people who care about each other and are listening to each other. So the gradual onboarding, helping someone see over time that you're not kind of crazy to want this for your future, showing them small wins, small income that turns into large income over time, I think is a very good way to go, because it is very relational. It's not sort of shocking, and it gives you both time and a relationship to adjust to these overlapping goals.
And this fits in very well with my stair-step approach to entrepreneurship of starting small, getting some small wins, and then doubling down on that success, and then eventually working your way up the ladder, essentially, or up the stairs, and getting to recurring revenue and enough to quit your job and all that stuff. And that's how we view this first approach, this gradual onboarding approach, where your first app, maybe you just can just make the car payment. And what's a trip is that in our circles, I mean, it's a few $100, right? Let's say $200 to $400, depending on what kind of car you have. In our circles, that's not a ton of money to make from an app. But to a non-founder spouse, that could be interesting. Like, hey, look at this thing that's basically making money on its own at this point, and let's see if we can make it pay the mortgage. And I have a bunch of friends who are doing that now and have apps on the side that are paying their mortgage, you know, and then you just try to work it up.
The other advantage of this, of course, is that instead of using that money to pay the mortgage, you use that money to invest in your bigger idea, which is what you did. You never paid the mortgage, at least not early on. You didn't pay the mortgage. You didn't pay the car payment. You saved that money and reinvested and bought Hittail and then invested that in Drip, so that we never bet the farm, which was important.
Right. And that is the point. I guess making the car payment itself would basically be pulling all the money out of the business all the time for personal reasons. And that would take you a lot longer to grow at that point. But I think the idea that you could say, look, it could make the car payment, now let's reinvest this back. And it could make the mortgage down. Let's reinvest this back. Now it's my salary. Let's quit the job. Now I have a ton of time and I can basically move up the stair step.
So another approach that we've covered in different episodes over the last year is to do it together, to get your partner very involved in the startup, whether they bring some technical skills or some design skills or some accounting or finance skills, some people management skills, to essentially plan to do the startup together and get their full buy-in so that this is something that you're both working toward. It becomes your shared goal and your shared vocation. That definitely doesn't work for every relationship, but I think it's kind of a great way to go if both of you are ready to take the plunge into that entrepreneurial life.
Right. And we've seen that with folks we've interviewed, like Mel and Flash from Tap Hunter, Matt and Joelle from the Rocket Ship podcast, and now Churn Buster. There are other examples of that.
Yeah. Or even like Jason Roberts, where his wife, Sandy, is quite involved in managing the books and helping to manage his consulting kinds of things. So they aren't business partners per se, but she is pretty deeply involved in the day-to-day practice of his work.
And the third approach that we touched on a little bit earlier is to basically to do it separately. And in this case, this is when maybe you have the go-ahead to do it, but you kind of are doing it out on your own. And in this case, you have to balance what, Sherry, you came up with the I versus we. And why don't you talk a little bit about what that means? What does it mean to balance I versus we?
When you're doing something separately, one of you is doing a startup. It is not a shared activity. It is one person who is committing their time, whatever resources are available to them, and they are doing the ins and outs of the business. And that's the I. Like, I have this business. I am an entrepreneur. I am doing this. And you can do that on your own, and many people do, and it works just fine. And in a way, that's what we do. You're an entrepreneur and I'm a psychologist and we have separate jobs. But this has to shift when what is demanded for the startup requires a significant investment from the communal fund, so to speak. When it's we are putting our house down as collateral on this loan, or we are deciding to take our children out of school because we've decided to travel. Like, that's where one person's decision-making, one person's startup activities really affect the whole family. So you can do it separately up to a point, but I think you reach a place on that staircase, if you're following that stair-step approach, that the numbers become so big, that the risks become so big, and the demands on your time become so big that you then have to go back to that initial investor, that initial customer who is your spouse, and say, here, we're at the next level, and now we need to decide if we are going to go to the next level together, or if we're going to hang out on this stair and be very successful here at this level, but not move up and not risk anymore.
Yeah, and I think with all three of these approaches we've outlined, there needs to be ongoing check-ins, you know, that every month or every 2 months that the founder says, look, I know this is hard. How are you doing with this? Here's our progress so far. Here's where we stand. Are you still on board with it? Because things are going to change and it's going to be, I don't think this is going to be a conversation you can have once and then just let go. It's got to be an ongoing conversation. And the nice part about that is you can make it an excuse to get a sitter, go out to dinner and hang out and have a conversation. And it's not always going to be fun, but you can at least try to make it that.
It's kind of a board meeting.
It is like a board meeting. Hey, may even be able to write off the dinner, consult your tax professional. I'm not a CPA.
So I'm really curious, what did Jim decide to do?
Jim met with his wife and they had what I can only assume is a very in-depth and probably at times intense conversation. And they talked about a lot of the things that we've talked about here, and they decided not to move forward. And I had told him before they had this conversation that it had to be a mutual unanimous decision to do this if they were going to put all this on the line, and that he had to be genuinely okay with it, right? That he couldn't open this up and then if she said no, be mad about it or be passive aggressive or whatever, that for it to function and be the right choice, that they really both needed to be on board either way, and that they were both in it. And that if she gave the thumbs up and he did as well, that a year or two down the road, if things did go south, that she couldn't turn around and bail on him. It had to be a mutual decision. That's what I was really trying to communicate. And that's what it turned out to be, from what I can tell. They decided not to move forward with this one. It's still open for the future. It wasn't a, we'll never do this, we'll never risk this. It was, this one feels a little too risky based on the numbers. His wife just wasn't willing to do it. And I think that's okay.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com. used under Creative Commons.